If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
G'day everyone, thanks for joining me for another episode of Hammer at Home. If you listened to last week's episode, you would have heard me talking to a bloke called Derek Riley. He's an author and he's my ghostwriter for the book that I wrote and co-wrote with Miguel Maestre. My book's called Life Force. It's all about my life, my fight with cancer, and some stories which I think explain how I became the man I am today. In this episode, I'm going to read to you one of those chapters. It was Derek's favourite chapter. It's one of my favourites as well. It's a short one, but it involves some adult themes and a little bit of coarse language. So if there's any kids in the car, you might want to save this one to later. Let's get into it. Dollar Walls was a wrecking yard on Riverside Road in Moorbank, which is in the western suburbs of Sydney and a few hundred metres from where I lived. You could always go down to Dollar Walls to get a part for your car, and it was always a dollar or two. It didn't matter if it was a motor or a carburetor. It was just $1 or $2, and it had to be cash. The owner, Wall, was a horrible sight. He was a big, ugly, grease-covered man in overalls. He never wore a shirt underneath, and he had wads of cash, $1 and $2 and $5 notes, stuffed into his pockets and his undies. Quite gross, really. Every now and then, my dad would walk down to Dollar Walls and buy us what he called a $10 bomb. And that was for us to drive around the paddocks behind our house. This is back when I was 8, 9, 10, 11. They were great years. The only rule Dad had was you had to stay in first gear. A kid from down the road hated that rule, and as soon as we were out of sight, he'd show us how to jam it into second and then in third and show us how to spin the wheels. By the time I was 12, I was going sideways around corners. But this isn't a story where I swing down memory lane and talk about a couple of kids driving cars in back paddocks. It's about my dad, it's about masculinity, and it's about idolising a man who wasn't afraid to raise his fist if he thought his dignity was being threatened. And it's about how that attitude would affect my life for a long, long time. You see, sometime in the 70s, the wrecking yard industry changed a lot, and it seemed a lot of bikies had taken over these yards, particularly in the western suburbs. I guess it was the repurposed stolen cars and wash cash they might have made from heroin that was really starting to hit the streets in those days. Riverside Drive was soon all wrecking yards and it started to become a real industrial area. Dad despised these new wrecking yard owners because they were only out to make a profit and literally nothing else. Maybe Wall died or maybe he sold, I'm not sure, but one day he wasn't there. The smell of grease was gone and you had to walk along a line on polished concrete floor to examine old parts that were now cleaned and on a wall. And they sure weren't $1 or $2 anymore. The same carburetor was now $15, the same water pump, $20. Dad just hated it. So there we are. It's a stinking hot day in 1976. We walked into this joint and straight away my dad summed these three bikey guys up. And I knew from his vibe that he was not in awe. I have to say, I was. There is no doubt about it, these were rough men. As horrible as Wall might have been, these guys were next level. Big, bearded, bikey thugs, covered in tattoos. And for any millennials that might be listening to this, it might be hard for you to imagine, but 40 years ago, if you had a tattoo, you'd either been in the Navy or in prison. If you were covered in tattoos like these men were, it was an easy signal to read. Don't mess with these guys. And Dad must have given them a bit of a look because they had attitude with him which made me feel really uneasy. My dad would always start a conversation with "How you going, mate?" and put his hand out for it to be shaken. He put his hand out to these guys and the first bloke ignored it and said, "Yeah, mate, what do you want?" Well, you may as well have belted my dad over the head with a stick than say that to him. When he offers you a hand and you don't take it, you're about a second away from copping it like you've never got it before. My dad was a great boxer and he could handle himself. We were there to buy a water pump for a mustard yellow 1973 model Gallant that I had just bought. I got it cheap because it was covered in hail damage. My first car, glamorous, not even close. And there was a water pump on the wall, all cleaned up, $15, the guy says. Dad must have been looking for a fight because he said, "You know, mate, you can stick that up your ass. I'll go down the back and get one myself." These blokes were prepping my dad. He looked at me and told me to go to the car and grab the toolbox. As I started to walk away, they said, "Nah, you can't take your tools down there. You've got to hire our tools." My dad started to fume. You could see it. He was boiling over. They gave in and said, "Go on, use your own fucking tools." They swore at my dad. They swore in front of me. That didn't happen in my world. To my dad, I may as well have been 3 years old. I could see the veins in his arms and his neck pulsating. He was fired up. Dad wasn't a big man. He was 6'2", but more a middleweight, 80 kilos after a couple of beers. But size and weight meant nothing when you know how to handle yourself. I've seen fools throw punches that he would slip and slide under. The worst thing you could do was lift your hands to him. You wouldn't know what was coming next. We walked down the back of the yard and we found a Gallant. We got in with our tools and got the water pump off. We cleaned it up and brought it back to the counter. They tell my dad it's $14. The one on the wall was $15. They were egging him on. Three blokes, the biggest one sitting down with the hideous smart-ass look on his face. My dad was seeing red, but I was with him and he wasn't going to risk a blow-up while I was there. Still, they pushed him and they pushed him. He had no patience anyway and only 2 seconds for fools. But he put up with these three guys for a long time and eventually he says, "I'll give you $10 or you can stick it up your ass." That's exactly how he said it. He was fired up now. "You can stick it up your ass." I remember it like it was yesterday. So he dropped $10 on the counter and walked off with me and the water pump. The next minute, you wouldn't believe it, a tire wrench skimmed across the floor just past us. They were just trying to push him even further. Dad looked at me and he'd lost it. He just said simple words, "Go to the car." I said, "Don't worry about him, Dad. Please don't worry about him." He said, "Go to the car." I took the water pump with me and I went to the edge of the garage and looked back. He had lost it. The one who was mouthiest took a swing at my dad because he knew what was coming. He knew my dad was ready for a blue. My dad dropped his head under this guy's haymaker. He could have taken him easily with just one punch, but Dad jabbed him anyway just to straighten him up and then gave him a proper uppercut and lifted him, literally lifted him off the ground. With that, the big guy who was sitting down drinking Coca-Cola out of a 1 litre bottle started to stand up and Dad hit him straight on the nose. He split it like a goat's toe straight across his face. He fell back in his chair unconscious and the other bloke just ran for his life. And Dad said, "You throw something at my son again, I'll jam my boot so far up your ass your nose will bleed." He then grabbed the $10 and walked out. And I thought, they deserved it, those idiots. The thing is with boxing, if you know where to place your fists, if you're at the right angle to someone, you can decommission them straight away. Two men were unconscious and another man was running for his life somewhere out the back. Dad walked back, looked at me and said, "I told you to get in the car." And that's a wild story, but I reckon 10 or more things could have went wrong that day. They could have hit my dad with that tire wrench and killed him. He could have lifted one of those blokes onto the corner of a table and maybe they'd be dead. My dad would be in jail. I was incredibly proud of my dad. It was a superhero moment, but it was one of those things that had me raising my fists sooner than I should have in my life. I've knocked dozens of blokes out in my life now and I'm not proud of those things. As a calculated, analytical sort of guy, I learned, and yeah, it took me a while to learn it, that in life you have to limit your risks and maximise your returns. Here's an example of how I turned a potentially disastrous situation around. It's about 20 years later. I'm a successful builder. I've got developments all over Sydney. And every Friday afternoon, I'd go to the Lord Dudley pub, a pub in Paddington, and write all the subcontractors their checks, their payments. I was a healthy and very strong man, and I didn't take a backward step to anyone. But still, I was in my mid-30s and too old to be fighting or throwing punches in a pub, that's for sure. To put it in perspective, though, just about every single bloke in the bar that afternoon, the scaffolders, the plasterers, the brickies, they were all being paid by me, and I had a reputation that was pretty strong. You see, I'd cleaned up a few scuffles that had started in that pub over the years. Anyway, I was standing at the bar when a guy turned around and bumped into me and spilled his drinks all over me. And he said, "You'll be paying for those, mate." At that moment, all I could think was this. Jeez, I'm having fun tonight. I didn't want this idiot to come along and wreck it. Now I'm going to have to knock his block off. Anybody who talks to you like that is in all sorts of trouble. Warn me that you're going to do something to me and you're really limiting your options. I don't care if you're 6'6". Certain blokes just don't do that. These are the blokes that know. They don't threaten you. If you ask for it, they'll finish it quickly. To the loud ones like this clown, if you offer me a jaw, I'll put you to sleep in a second. But I said to him, "No worries, mate. I'll buy those drinks and I'll buy every drink you have tonight. Anyway, let's get a round of cigars as well." He was carrying drinks for five blokes. They were the only blokes in the bar wearing suits, and you could tell just looking at them, they thought they were doing okay. I brought drinks for them and just about everybody else in the bar all night. As the drinks were being pulled, I quietly said, "Mate, what were you thinking? That could have gone nowhere. One of us would have had their head split open, the other one would have been getting hauled off in the back of a paddy wagon. So I'm going to make this the best night we can have." My brother Mick, who'd been at the bar, called me the next day and said, "Who are those idiots you were with last night? They rang me up at about 1 o'clock in the morning to tell me that you were some sort of legend." I said to him, "That's a dickhead who pushed me at the bar." That was a good moment in my life. It's a story I tell a lot of young blokes. It reminds me of myself when I was in my 20s. Fighting, who needs it? The best return is to continue the fun time you are having, offer friendship, a smile, even an apology if you need to. It's an easy investment for a good return. Well, there you go. That's a chapter of my life. It's also a chapter in my book, Life Force. I hope it wasn't too crass for you guys. I hope part of it resonates with you as well. If you want more information about it, I've chucked a link in the show description. Of course, you can go online and buy that book, Life Force. There's also a bunch of great recipes from Miguel at the back of it. It's not just about me brawling, though. It's about my journey with cancer, some of the ways that I've treated my own cancer, and about life in general. Miguel Maestre adds in amazing recipes that he collaborated with the nutritionist at the Chris O'Brien Lifehouse. There's also a chapter there from Judith Lacey about the journey and her work with cancer. And again, if you've got any questions, don't forget you can email me at hammerathome@network10.com.au. As I said, offer a smile, handshake, apology, but love someone. It's the best way to go. Take it easy, guys.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I love that as well. When I first started in TV, I went into TV kicking and screaming, but they got me.
I'd like to order a coffee. I've got a list here. I'd like a long black, two flat whites, one of them skim with a sugar, a raspberry and apple bread, I think.
Hang on, what?
What are you? Raspberry and apple bread.
What are you talking about? This is a podcast studio. What do you
mean? The sign says cafe.
Oh, we forgot to take that down. But this is a podcast studio, all right? We're recording 10 Speaks podcasts in here.
Well, I'll take one of those.
All right, well. There's the Professor in the Hack, the Western Front, Where's William Tyrrell, the Reality Bite, Cocktails and Roses, or Hammer at Home. But this is definitely not a cafe.
Okay.
Do you feel like a silly person?
A little, yes. How long is this promo going?
It's going on for quite some time now.